Chapter 14. In support of betrayal. I am Alpharius. Not in vain. Palace Outworks, Daylight Wall, Section 16, Contested Zone, 25th of Secundus. Ms. Madra found it easy enough to slip away from the skirmish down the third line towards the overrun zone. The attack was coming to a close, and a heavy quiet took hold, where the roar of distant voices and munitions blended into an avalanche rumble, threatening but far away. Shouts were coming from the second line, so she kept to the ramparts of the third, out of sight in the drifting smoke. She was more than capable of moving unseen when occasion required. Explosion flash lit up the devastation, the harsh light more disorienting than illuminating. Dead abhumans lay strewn across the killing zone between the third and second lines, their bestial faces still twisted with the rage of battle. She almost pitied them. She knew little of their kind, but what she did told a sorry tale of a rejected human offshoot, not quite debased enough to kill out of hand, but too different to be afforded dignity. The rank chemical smells of frenzen and slaught rose from them, the foam around their muzzles another telltale sign of combat drug administration. But she doubted they needed much encouragement to kill. The Imperium promised peace and advancement for all mankind, except for those it didn't. Creatures like these lived lives of abject misery. Lies upon lies. The baseline human corpses she saw were of both loyalists and traitors. Not that those terms meant anything to her. Allegiance hadn't spared either side the savagery of the abhumans. Both traitor and loyalist had been ripped into and showed signs of cannibalism. She passed through a platoon of dead traitor soldiers. On the line, the loyalists spoke of scum and dregs. But despite the symbols of dark gods sprayed onto their equipment and the fetishes hanging from their kit, these were professionals from once loyal regiments. Scum wouldn't undertake such a suicide mission. You needed discipline for that kind of sacrifice. You needed belief in the cause. Activity on the second line was increasing, risking her discovery. So she skidded down the outer face of the rampart. A shell had come down at the foot of the wall, laying out men and body parts in a pattern of gory regularity. Her eyes caught on the stock of a lasgun on the fringes of the crater. Upon it was etched a crude octet, painted red with recent blood. The icon was a blasphemy in a world that was supposed to be beyond such things. Ms. Madra didn't believe in Horus's cause. He was a puppet of awful powers. She didn't think the Alpha Legion believed in him either, though they hid their purpose behind a hedge of deceit. The Alpha Legion could be trusted to be untrustworthy. That was all. It was enough. In her experience, that was about as much assurance as any human being could get about anything. After the Battle of Pluto, before the Legion had cast her and Ashul back out into the void, she'd prodded at the legionaries. Ms. Madra wasn't likable, but she was good at getting people to talk. Legionaries, however, were not people. She'd exerted herself. She really had, asking why they fought and received the same answer she always did, if she got any answer at all. For the Emperor. They said that to her over and over again, even when their actions could only be construed as being directly contrary to the Imperium's survival. For the Emperor. She'd heard that maybe a dozen times, which was a lot, coming from so secretive a group. Maybe she was being foolish, but she chose to believe it. Her thoughts went back to the first time she'd heard it. For the Emperor, he'd said that to her when she was recruited. Alpharius, he said his name was, but they all said they were him. Was he Alpharius? Was he the warrior who fought at Pluto, truly? Maybe they all were Alpharius. There were stranger things in the universe now than a legion of clones. How long ago was it? A decade? 15 years? Time was one of those bedrocks of civilization that didn't have anything sensible to say once you interrogated it. Time was like money, a convenient, mutually agreed fiction. It wasn't real, not in the way people thought. It was a human construct, a collective delusion. Nobody liked to hear things like that. When she was young, she'd said that, and similar, once too often. Finding her opinions unwelcome, she'd tried to go as far away from humanity as possible, fetching up in the back end of nowhere, on a planet that was itself at the back end of nowhere, cosmically speaking. Out there, in the dry maquis, there was nothing to do but scratch a living and drink. She did the former, desultorily, and the latter with great enthusiasm. She still didn't know why she had been chosen. One night, exactly when was not important enough to remember, she returned from the local taverna to find a stranger in her tattyhab module. There were precisely 159 people in her village and the scorched hills around about it. As soon as she saw the silhouette of her visitor in the dark of her living quarters, she knew he was not one of them, primarily because none of her neighbours were warriors of the Legiones Astartes. He was big, even for one of their breed, perched precariously on one of her chairs. His knees were too far off the ground to go under the table, and he had arranged it so it was in front of him, with the only other chair she owned set aside for her to sit upon. Despite his incongruous size, he somehow contrived to be unobtrusive, a trick all the Legion seemed to have. Intelligent eyes glinted in the depths of a camouflage hood. Throughout their entire meeting, he did not take it down. "Lydia Mismadra," he stated. He didn't ask. She had her gun in her hand before he could blink. That seemed to entertain him. "Shoot me, if you like," he said. "If you do, you will never know why you came home to find me in your hovel." He looked around, finding great amusement in the piles of dirty clothes and the unwashed utensils spilling from the sink. "A reduction in circumstances for a woman of your background. I doubt your family would be impressed with your living arrangements."
"My family's none of your damn business," she said.
She waved the gun barrel at the door.
"Out,"
she said. He remained where he sat. His smile hardened just a little.
"Let me rephrase what I was saying before. You can try to shoot me. I will kill you."
"Who are you?"
she said. "I am Alpharius," he said. Her gun lowered a fraction.
"The 20th Primarch?" "Don't be ridiculous."
"Whether you believe me or not is irrelevant.
It is how you will address me," he said. "Otherwise, my lord will do." Could it have been him? So many of the Legion looked like their gene sire.
"What do you want with me?"
she said. "Straight to the meat of the matter." He appeared pleased.
"My Legion likes people like you, Lydia."
"Nobody calls me that," she said. "Not ever.
We like competent people. We like people who get things done. People we might use."
"Who says I want using?"
she said. "Please," he said. He held out an enormous hand. The skin tone was unusual, coppery to the point of metallic. "Sit." Despite his politeness, it was not a request. She obliged, but kept her gun up.
"I am looking for someone Terran-born, but who is not too attached. Someone who believes in what the Emperor is doing, but not the way it is being done. Someone who suspects that things are not what they have been told."
"What are you talking about?"
"You're not frightened, are you?" said Alpharius. Once more he was pleased.
"The psychological effect of the presence of legionaries on some mortals can be overwhelming. It's worse for we Primarchs. I've seen people piss themselves when I walk in the room."
"But you don't care, do you? You'd shoot me right now if you didn't want to know why I was here. And you see my threat is good, that you'll die if you try. So you're not rash. You don't panic."
"That's good. That's very good. Get to the point or get out of my house."
White teeth grinned in the shadow of his hood.
"Very well. The Imperium is doomed. Horus Lupercal, the War Master, will fall under the sway of forgotten gods and betray the Emperor. This will happen in a few years. The fate of the galaxy and everything within it is at stake."
She snorted.
"Nonsense. Is this some kind of test?
No.
You're going to stop him, then?
Not exactly. If Horus loses, said the man who called himself Alpharius, the Imperium will be crippled. It will allow these gods to prosper, to the extent that they will eventually overthrow the laws of reality, leading to a catastrophic blending of the warp with the material universe.
Surely that would happen if he won.
We have sources that tell a different story. Should Horus win, humanity will burn itself out in an orgy of violence, fatally weakening these entities, these gods. He made a face at the word. Please be aware I use the term loosely. Eventually, it will allow for their destruction, saving all reality. The Emperor has known of these things since the beginning.
He lied, she said.
She wasn't surprised. Perhaps with good reason, said Alpharius with a shrug. His design is to keep mankind safe. The Primarchs, Unity, the Imperium, all of that. But he will not succeed. In trying, he will make the problem worse. Apocalyptically so.
If you know this now, why don't you stop Horus? Why don't you warn the Emperor?
The events cannot be stopped. Even if they could, the result would be the same, or similar. They would happen a few thousand years later. And that is the end of the universe. In simple terms, he added. She waved her gun at him.
What's this got to do with me?
We need people to help us. I would like you to help me.
Marvelous. Assuming this is all true, why would you tell me? How do I know you're not lying?
Alpharius shifted. The chair, comically small under him, creaked dangerously. Most of the people I speak to don't hear the truth. Some of them believe we are working against the Emperor because we wish to rebel, or that we hate him. And because they hate him and wish to rebel themselves, they are only too glad to join us. We tell people what they need to hear. Everyone has a lever. For most, it comes down to money, or power, or a combination of them. Most people are simple. But someone like you craves neither money nor power. You had both and walked away from them. Only the truth will do for you. You want to mean something, Lydia Mismadra. I am offering you the chance to spend your life in pursuit of the worthiest cause of all, the protection of... He paused and smiled, as if they were sharing a private joke. Of everything, he concluded. She laughed at him. Let me put this another way, Mismadra, he said. You are alone, destitute, and in danger. You are very far from home. The unification of humanity passes people like you by. You are the kind of person who looks in at society from the outside, never part of the group, always ill at ease, because you can see how foolish other people are, how quickly they are duped, how fast they take on beliefs they know to be false in order to construct a comfortable reality for themselves. You know instinctively how much they overestimate their understanding of the world. You sneer at their optimism because you feel only despair. You laugh at their troubles, for their woes are small and pathetic when set against the unfeeling sweep of time. You condemn them for their friendships because you see betrayal in every smile. He leaned forwards. But what really hurts you is that you long to be like them. For you know you are no better, that your intelligence might be greater, but ultimately it is as limited as theirs. You know enough to know you know nothing. So you yearn for their society, their delusions and their ignorance. You are tormented because you understand too much, but comprehend far too little.
Riddles and lies, she snorted.
It is the Emperor who lied, calculatedly and regrettably. He was right. She despised her race. She supposed that he expected her to blanch and stammer and deny it all, or become angry. Once she might have done, but she was too jaded for all that. Not very much later, after their meeting, she realized had she evinced any one of those reactions, she would have died at that table.
"And your point is?" she said.
With her free hand, she picked a splinter from the wood. Her sharp fingernails were perfectly manicured even then, out there in that hole.
"I'm not the first woman to look at the apish herds of humanity and hate them for what they are, or to hate myself for being one of them. I came to terms with it."
The stranger looked around her hovel with a smile on his copper face. "It seems you have. You've done very well," he said sarcastically.
"What does it matter to you?" she said. "Space Marines aren't renowned for their psychological insight."
"Contrary to popular belief, we weren't all made the same," he said. His smile widened. "Our Legion looks for people with particular qualities. You have them in abundance." She raised an eyebrow at that. "Contrary to popular belief," he repeated the words so exactly it could have been a recording, "the Legions have different roles to play. Ours was designed for intelligence and counterintelligence roles, infiltration, subversion, and propaganda. All the dirty, dark sides of human interaction. Other Legions pull triggers. We pull levers."
"Illusion," he said mockingly,
waggling his fingers in front of his face.
"Misdirection."
He looked down. Her gaze followed his unconsciously. A pistol had appeared on the table between them. Small for him, it would have required both her hands to hold it steady. It wasn't one of the inelegant signature weapons of the Legionis Astartes, the blocky, barking death dealers they bore. It wasn't a bolt gun, but a slender alien thing. It looked quiet. Details. It was deadly, whatever it was, and he didn't need it. She could have run right then. Fast as she was, she wouldn't have made it out of the room before he grabbed her and broke her neck. She wondered if he'd enjoy it, or if he'd be disappointed in her, or if her death might be used in some way to make a point to someone else in some other place.
"So," she said, "tell me if I understand correctly. The Emperor's most loyal son is going to rebel. Having fallen under the sway of gods we've all been carefully taught don't exist. And you want to help him to win in order to deny said non-existent ancient gods the opportunity to overrun all of existence."
"That leaves out a lot of the nuance, but that is the basics of it, yes," he said.
"And this will result in the extinction of mankind?"
"Sadly, but certainly."
"So if I act on your behalf, I will die," she said.
"If you choose not to, you will die in the next few minutes. If you join us, you will die eventually. But I promise you will not die in vain. Nobody that serves us does."
"Are you rebels?" she asked incredulously.
"No," he said plainly. "I wish there was another way. Either humanity dies now and the universe is saved, or it dies later, and every living, breathing, thinking thing that exists in this reality will perish in torment."
"Then why would you do this?" she asked,
genuinely curious. Although her death might have been seconds away, it was worth knowing, just for a moment. "There are other powers in the world besides these gods. They are not exactly benevolent, but they are not evil."
"That's not an answer," she said. "Why do you do it?"
"For the Emperor," he said simply. That conversation was the most she had ever heard any one of them say. She lifted her gaze from the octet carved into the gunstock. Above the clouds, night was falling. Under them, darkness was kept at bay by the bombardment. The world was orange from the shelling of the breached outwork sector. The Aegis shone a lurid purple. Hugging the shadows, she made her way to her destination at the very edge of the zone being fired on by the walls. There was a turret half a kilometre on, a small version of the outwork bastions that were themselves small versions of the palace towers. Dawn's fortifications had a fractal nature, each part a smaller reproduction of the greater parts, all interlocking, covering and supporting each other. From this simplicity of design arose complexity of defence.
There were four dead officers in the turret command center. Their suite of rugged equipment was functioning, but offline. The screens for the cogitators, blue fuzzies. Ms. Madra was skilled with such devices, and soon had them dancing to her tune. She was sifting through the data loom when a noise outside had her facing the door, a looted las pistol in her hand.
"I thought I'd find you here," said Ashul.
He stepped through the door, his gun cradled in the crook of his arm. He carried it as if he'd always had it, as if it were a child.
"Did you find anything useful?"
She nodded, keyed the cogitator off, then put several shots through it.
"I found tunnels under the bastions. They present opportunities."
"Opportunities worth dying over?"
"You were lucky.
Chances were that you'd be shelled by dawn before you got here."
"We have to seize what resources we have. It's worth a little risk."
She shook her head.
"All this care and attention the Primarch Dawn goes to. And these fools have all the data I need copied onto their unit cogitator."
She went through the bodies, checking jewelry and pockets for cipher keys and signum identifiers. "Anyone could have found it."
"Anyone did," said Ashul. "I thought we were done with this," he added after a pause. "After Pluto. When they sent us back, I thought, what more could they possibly want from us?"
"You're never done, Ashul," she said.
She pocketed an ornate ring and a data wand.
"Not with them."
"The name's Doromek, currently. Better use it," Ashul said absently.
He looked out the door.
"There will be men here soon. They're re-garrisoning this section now the enemy have been forced back. You need to leave. It'll raise awkward questions if you're found here, and you'll be executed if they find those keys on you."
"Let me worry about that," she said.
"It's you that should leave." He shook his head.
"I'm supposed to be here. I'm acting lieutenant. I volunteered to scout ahead on account of my proven skill set."
He smiled humorlessly.
"It is my sworn mission to retake this turret. I count it accomplished."
She scowled at his joking.
"You're making too much of a show of yourself. And you're too close to that trooper."
"Katsuhiro. He's harmless. We might need him, and others. You said it. We have to make use of the resources we have, and we don't have very many right now."
She gave him a black look.
"When you've finished playing Hail Fellow Well Met, why don't we see about doing what we're supposed to be doing?"
"I get a bit tired of hanging back all the time," said Ashul. "And it's working. I'm in now. We'll find life a lot easier if I've got influence. Jainan listens to me. He needs me."
"You should stop it. You're losing focus. You're drawing attention to yourself."
Ashul shrugged.
"Attention sometimes works."
"Be careful."
"We're going to die," he said.
Ms. Madra gave him a tight nod.
"But not in vain," she said.